better than the other. So a vertical antenna doesn't require very expensive hardware. There's various ways you can build one of those. But I'm not completely giving up yet on the G5RV. Is there any other support? The chimney of the house, a tree on the property, a tree on the neighbor's property where you can make a deal with them. Is there anything else that can give you, let me pick a number, 10 more feet of altitude of the center of that antenna? Guarantee you're going to see some improvement, if that is possible, Jim. KD2BHY, K2LAW.
There is a tree in the neighbor's yard, but I don't think that would get it up much higher. It goes just higher than my window, and yeah, I'm not sure that would get it much higher, but yeah, I'll see what I can do. Also, how would I go about building a vertical?
Let's see now. We're going to start some research on verticals. Unfortunately, the nicest way to build a vertical is out of wire and hang it from a very tall tree. I'm hearing that you don't have that tall tree. Some of those verticals that are commercially made where they're self-supporting, it's the good news, but they require quite a few ground plane radios to be high in efficiency, and they're expensive. I know that you're on a limited budget, and so to buy a $300 antenna wouldn't really please you at this time. I can understand that. We're not going to go there. I'll throw it open to the net. You guys know that he's only got a two-story house that he's living in. His bedroom's on the second floor, roughly 25 feet above the ground. There aren't very many higher trees on the property. So to buy a commercial 2-meter ground plane, multi-band rig, antenna, I know they're kind of expensive. Anybody listening have a suggestion as to how Jim could build a vertical antenna? Give me a call, letters right now. K2LAW for TechNet.
KD2AVO with a comment.
2F4B with a comment.
Yes, India Whiskey.
And 2SLW with a comment.
It's 3-0, yes, India Whiskey.
And 2Mike Bravo with a comment.
Okay, I got a whole lot of comments. Tim first. KD2AVU, go right ahead, Tim.
Let me drop it first. Jim, if you can go onto YouTube, do a search of multi-band trap vertical, and I think, I forgot that guy's called KD0ZZN or something. He has a tutorial of how to build a 3-band trapped vertical, 10, 15, and 20, I think. It's a coax trap, so pretty easy to build. You definitely need to buy some aluminum tubing. If not, you can use a PVC tubing as support and just use a regular wire. Make sure you put enough radios underneath the antenna. That's my comment. Back to the net.
Thank you for that one, Tim. Russell is the next guy. N2FRB, go right ahead with your comment there, Russ.
Yeah, hi, Dick. I just have two points. Excuse me. One is he could maybe try, if he doesn't have, if he has his window, and he can bring an antenna down to the ground, he could try an infrared antenna and feed it with his tuner, and that will kind of work just high enough for the infrared to go down to the down to the ground to a stake in the ground about 10 feet, and that with against lasers on both sides. Excuse me. And also on the internet, there's a place called E.ham, E.ham. And they have multiple antennas of projects that you can make for all sorts of situations. I have copied a couple of them for apartments antennas, and they have ones for all kinds of different types of antennas to build. So that's my two comments, Dick. 3QRAW and 2FRB.
Hi,
got the India Whiskey, SLW, JIW, and NB in that order. India Whiskey, give me your full call and your name and your comment, sir. K2LIW. I was pretty sure I heard something India Whiskey before. One more call, are you there?
Peter,
V3JIW,
who you have on your list?
Yeah, I got JIW. You're right after SLW. John, N2SLW, go right ahead with your comments, sir. K2LIW, the tech man.
Okay, thank you, Dick. I heard Jim say that he's on from 12 to 1 in the afternoon. Ask him not to condemn his antenna installation. He might be on at a very bad time for others. And is his antenna pointing north-south at his location, being that we're in the northeast part of the United States?
Yeah, you might be onto something here, Jim. Hi, John. I'm going to find out from Jim what the orientation is, but the first thing I want to know from you, John, you think around noontime is not the best time. If he's able to stay up late enough, maybe on weekends, from your point of view, John, what time of day locally does 20 meters give the best performance? N2SLW, K2LIW.
Dick, I've been fooling around outside on and off with the hamstick conglomeration I'm playing with. And there are days when the bands are dead. I can't give you a specific time. I'm just saying he shouldn't condemn his antenna when he doesn't know the condition of the band. If he could contact someone else that's on at the same time he is and see if they're receiving more stations than he is, then he can condemn his antenna. Otherwise, I would just say he's on at a bad time. Let him go on later in the evening if he can.
Okay, that's a pretty good suggestion, John. And Jim did say that he's checking with, I think he said QIZ.com, to find out what are the 20-meter band position, band conditions at the time that he's trying to make contacts. But John did ask the question, Jim, what's the orientation of your antenna? Is the wire east-west, north-south? What direction is the wire at your QTH, Jim? KD2BHY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Pointed at north and south.
Okay, that's what you wanted to know, John. Is that possibly an unfavorable direction, and is there a better direction? N2SLW, K2LIW.
No, Dick, he's probably got it pointed just about as best as he can, the way he's got it installed. If it's not easily rotatable, north and south should work for him.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that one, John, because particularly an inverted V, the nice thing about an inverted V is it does not have the nulls off the end of the antenna that a flat-out parallel dipole would. So what an inverted V does is that broadside, it radiates horizontal polarization, and off the ends it radiates vertical polarization. So you're always on the air in all directions, so to speak, with an inverted V. It's one of my favorites among the wire-like antennas. Now, let's see what the guys up at the Golden Horseshoe in Canada have got to say. Jim, VE3JIW, K2RIW, go right ahead with your suggestion, Jim.
Evening. This is Victor Echo 3, Juliet, India Whiskey. A side comment. Just went through 8 days of no electricity because of a storm and trees and poles. And my neighbors and I combined went through 30 gallons of gasoline in 8 days. For Jim's problem, I was thinking, check the schedule for Whiskey 1 Alpha Whiskey for their CW transmissions. There's a low end of 20. I don't have internet to know when they are available. That's one station he's guaranteed that they're transmitting. And the other one is 15 megahertz, the Fort Collins, Colorado time signal. It would give him a baseline for received sensitivity, because as of yet, we don't know if the radio is healthy, and how about a long wire for receive just to prove the receiver? From Jim, 100 miles north of Toronto at the cottage, back to net.
Brian Jim, sorry to hear you had used 30 gallons of petrol. Wow. So you were ill without power for quite some period of time. And so those are pretty good suggestions. Now, when it comes to the sensitivity of the receiver, the fact that he can connect and disconnect the antenna and hear a significant amount of noise of the band suggests that the radio is working well and that the antenna is seeing the radio horizon. It's seeing the ionosphere is what that suggests. But what Jim is suggesting to you, that's Jim number two from Canada, is suggesting to you, Jim on Long Island, is if you listen to the code broadcast on W1AW, or the bulletins, by way of QST Magazine, or by going to arl.net, go to the ARRL website. You will, one way or another, be able to find out when the bulletin broadcast and code practice court broadcast of W1AW takes place. And they go on every single band at very specific hours of the day. So by listening to them, you're guaranteed that there's going to be a signal there of known distance and known signal strength. They've got some good antennas. And so that's another good check. And that's what Jim in Canada is suggesting to Jim on Long Island. Let's see what the Far Rockaway people have got to say here. Barry, N2 Moonbounce, what's your next suggestion? K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, well, I got a bunch of questions for Jim. First of all, I have a suggestion on that vertical. A vertical for 20, it's a little bit only looking for 20 meters. It's not looking for all the bands. I think a vertical on 20 meters is about 16 and a half feet tall, pretty sure. And if he takes about 20 feet of dowel or anything, buries it 2 feet in the ground so it stands by itself, and attaches a 16 feet, 5 inches of wire to it, he has a vertical, and it's self-supporting. I've done that. It works very well. There's a million other ways to do it. You could take a couple of pieces of aluminum pipe, you got it, stick it on a Coke bottle, and guy it up. I've done that, and that works very well also. And, of course, your radial is going to be 16 feet, 5 inches, so you need to... Well, at least three of them. And that antenna should work just fine for you. Jim has been telling me repeatedly, saying, what time of the day? Now, I've been listening to 20 meters quite a bit during the day, and it's terrible. So I got a funny feeling band conditions are really awful, and he's falling into a trap. The other thing I want to know is how far apart are the tips of his antenna? In other words, it's a V. You said it was a V. How V'd is it? Are they 10 feet apart, the two ends? Are they 30 feet apart? You know, what are they? And to my brother.
Yeah, there's some darn good suggestions there. When it comes to the vertical support, I'm going to give some extra words here. You've got lots of choices on this, Jim on Long Island, and that is it could be a piece of aluminum tubing that's 16 feet long. And guying really, the guying is not with guy wire, per se. You're going to guy with polyethylene rope, nylon rope, and so on. An insulated set of guys. And they go down to stakes in the ground or over to the house. There's various ways you can guy it to make sure it stays vertical. Barry also mentioned that it's possible to dig a hole in the ground and stick a bottle or a dowel of a 1-inch diameter or a 2-inch diameter dowel in the ground, and that becomes the support and simultaneously the insulator that the aluminum tubing sits on top of. And if you don't want to spend, if you don't want to spend the price for the aluminum tubing, the 16-foot higher radiator support could be a bamboo pole. It could be a piece of PVC pipe. Held vertical by way of guying ropes, and then the wire is either alongside of it or up the center of it. So the vertical radiator could be a piece of tubing, it could be a piece of wire that's being suspended. Even if the tree that we're talking about is 16 feet high, the tree could be the support for the vertical piece of wire. The ground plane radials that Barry is just mentioning, 16 feet, at least three of them parallel to the ground, and that becomes the part that the shield of the coax cable goes to, and the center conductor goes to that vertical radiator. So building a vertical ground plane is not too difficult, and there's at least five different ways of doing it, as you're hearing.
So Conway, the performance on that is absolutely spectacular.
Glad to hear that. It's got great performance. And now, Barry, give us some words, because you maybe hit the nail on the head when you said you're listening to 20 meters these days and the band is dead. Tell me how dead 20 meters is at the time that you believe Jim is listening, and is there a time of day on some of the recent days when 20 meters was in good shape? Tell us your impression of 20 meters for the last week or month, whatever, Barry. N2 Moon Bounce, K2LIW on the TechNet.
Hey, 20 meters has been good maybe 2 days out of the entire month. It's usually best around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it ain't good for long. It hasn't been great. 40 meters is better. It's more reliable. It's also more difficult for Jim to get on, because that's a bigger vertical, twice the size of the 20-meter vertical. But it's definitely more reliable if he has 40-meter capability. And even so, band conditions haven't been good. They really haven't been good. So I was listening today, and at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, I heard a couple of stations. And usually the big guns are working out, or the guys with the big antennas, they're doing fairly good. But the average guy, not so good. So don't give up, Jim. I'm telling you, don't give up.
And even if his inverted V is an extremely acute angle, still it's got to work. But just to...
I think that is going to be a big detriment. I want to find out how far apart that thing is spread.
I'm going to ask him. Stand by. And there's two different ways you can give us the information, Jim. A rough estimate as to how far apart is the northern end that goes down to a fence and the southern end that goes down to a support. How far they are apart is one way of looking at it. But the real way to look at it is if you looked at the antenna side view, what is the angle up at the top? Is it roughly a 90-degree angle? Right angle, in other words, or is it a little bit more open than that or a little bit more closed than that? So assuming the wire coming from the center insulator down to the north and the wire coming from the center insulator down to the south, assuming those wires are a little bit taut, not a whole lot of sag, what roughly is the angle at the center, Jim? And if it's around 90 degrees or a little more, a little bit more open than that, then I think we'll be putting that one to bed. KD2BHY, K2LIW, go right ahead, Jim.
KC2QIQL, a lot of comments.
Yeah, Jim first, go ahead, Jim.
A pretty obtuse angle. I have one of the ends of the antenna is the string goes over a branch and then the string is tied down to the fence. So that part of the antenna is basically almost straight and the other part is sloping at not a very large angle, but... You know, it is
local. Okay, there's quite a bit of ambiguity in what you just said, Jim. Are you saying that the northern end is almost parallel to the ground, and the southern end curves down to the ground pretty drastically? Which, by the way, is not bad, if that's what you're saying. If you had a protractor, and you were holding it near the center, what do you believe is that center angle? Is it more than 90 degrees? Well, less than 90 degrees. KD2BHY, K2LIW.
It's kind of hard to explain the way it's set up. It's just one end is straight, and the other end is... It's hard to explain the angle because I'm not really it's around 90 degrees.
And before I go over to Glenn. Is there a way you could take a photograph of the antenna, and you think it would show up in that photograph, and you could mail it to us? Is that possible, Jim? Go ahead.
Apparently, I can do that.
Okay. You mail me a photograph, or John, or anybody else. You mail any of us a photograph. We'll distribute it to the gang. And once we can see it, it'll put an awful lot of these questions to bed. But it sounds like Glenn has got a good number of questions. KC2QIQ, straighten us out, Glenn. KQIW in the...
Yeah, Dick, when he puts his hand on the two wires right outside his window, the V that he's going to form with his fingers, how many degrees apart is that V? I don't care if it's up, down, sideways, whatever. How many degrees apart is that V?
Sounds like he said 90 degrees. Back to you for a repeat of that one, Jim.
Just about 90 degrees.
With that.
Yeah, he's going to send us a photograph, so we're going to put that one to bed. Glenn, straighten us out here. You got it, Glenn.
QA2SAY with info.
Glenn first and then Doug in that order. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, good evening, Dick. KTORWKC2QIQ. Just listening to a bunch of different things, not so many questions here, more mainly just comments. 20-meter band is typically what I call the daylight band. It's your two best times on there are basically going to be sunrise and sunset. If you see the sun rising, 20 meters is hot. When the sun's going down, 20 meters is hot. 20 meters is active all day long as the sun's up. Working 20 meters at nighttime, that's when it's dead. Yes, you can make comments, but the conditions better be really super. Let me let it drop. Most of the stations that are on 20 meters are going to be horizontally polarized. Vertically polarized antennas, they're not going to be that great. And to get it set up properly at his location, it's not going to be an easy task because it's going to need a lot of ground plane radials, and he's going to have to have the antenna low to the ground. If he starts raising the vertical, you try to get it up, the takeoff angle goes off the road. You don't want to put this kid through that. So I would say vertical, that's something for another discussion. The G5RV that he has, the Junior right now, is an antenna that is very, very much layout sensitive. The performance that he's getting is what I would expect. I mean, G5RVs, they usually, if they're not set up like a T, at least at 45 feet, and drop that the ladder line down in a straight line, it almost acts exactly the way he's letting it describe. Let me let it drop. So nothing about what he's saying is really unexpected. Now the thing is, well, what can he do? Well, when I was a kid about his age and I wanted to get onto the low bands, one of the antennas that I had that over the years has always never failed and will work in his kind of basic configuration, the G5RV is going to be a cloud burner. Just like you said before, the antenna is too low, just the design and layout of it with the ladder line, that thing is just going to burn the clouds. But he can get away with basically a fan dipole. If he can even take apart his G5RV, get some extra wire and some extra egg insulators, he can make actually dipoles for each band one at a time and attach them directly to it. So in other words, if in the beginning he wants to try 10 meters, just cut the thing down to 20. Do that first. Cut it down to a 20-meter antenna and get rid of, and just tune it exactly for 20. Start there first. Then do each band one by one, and that antenna will tune just the receiver will pick up everything. And even at the rotten altitude that he's at now, he'll start really hearing stations. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
Although this is not one of the really great sunspot cycles, and maybe we're going to have a double peak, are the sunspots that non-cooperative? In other words, the band doesn't open anywhere near as much and as often and as many hours as we'd like, even though we're sort of near the peak of the sunspot cycle, but maybe this is a very weak peak. Give me a couple of words on that one, John. Glenn, KC2QIQ, K2LIW, and the tech man.
Dick, this is not the worst cycle I've ever seen let me finish this way. 20 meters is worldwide all year, all the time. So, I mean, if you have a good antenna at the right height with all the maximum things, in the worst conditions, you can work around the world on 20 meters. That's the beauty about 20 meters. It is really the international band. You can do that. Now, when your antenna has got some issues, there's some very, very significant operation on 20 meters that's very predictable. Let me let it drop for a second. One of the most common things that you notice first on 20 meters when your antenna is too low is, even though it's a good antenna and it's too low, let's say if he has a good fan dipole, what's going to happen is, let's say he's on the island, and he wants to talk to somebody over in, say, Queens. Won't be able to hear him. But the next guy over in Jersey and Ohio, he'll hear loud and clear. And he'll have five by nine contact directly over there, so it's spotty. And then the next one, he'll hear California great, or he'll hear Texas. But there'll be states in between that disappear. So that's common. Now, as far as the period of time of how long your conversations can go, it depends on the cycle. But I would say right now, he should be able to talk to stations in the afternoon, no problem at all. Case 2 QIQ.
Yeah, I'm going to give Jim a couple of words. When Glenn called it a cloud burner, that's another way of describing a needless antenna. If your antenna is only a half wavelength off the ground or a third of the wavelength off the ground, which is where you are, the majority of the energy is bouncing off the earth and going straight up. That's what he means by cloud burner, and not going out to the horizon. And with that needless antenna, you do end up with some pretty significant skip zones. The guy 15 miles away, we'd expect him to be gangbusters because he's so close, and he's not there. And the guy in New Jersey is there, and then the guy in California is there, and in between might not be there. You get some funny bouncing characteristics with a needless antenna. That's part of what's going on here. And so, now, where he does some of his work on a weekday afternoon, like at noon time, where the majority of Americans are at their place of business and working, and therefore they're not home playing ham radio, is that another aggravating factor to the amount of activity? What do you think on that one, Glenn? KC2 QIQ, K2LIW?
Vic, this is a very old sport. I would say that probably the average age of an amateur radio operator is probably 49 years old, and I would say the average is probably even older than that. You go to the club meetings and take a look around you, there's a lot of gray hair, and a lot of those people are retirees. And one of the things about retirees is, boy, they rag chew during the day. You want to get some of your best rag chews in the afternoon, especially on 20 meters, you can do it. And the problem with the weekends is you've got all the contests and everything, so you really can't rag chew. But let me tell you something, if Jim gets his antenna set up, he can sit there in the afternoon, and you know, he's got plenty of old men with a lot of gray hair, and you know, he can speak to all day long. KC2 QIQ.
Okay, I was wrong on that one. I'm going to pick up Doug, but it sounds like we've got a point of order here from John. KC2WGB, KQRIW, go ahead, John.
Yeah, quick question, Dick, was how is he hearing signals on other bands? You know, not transmitting, but is his reception any better? Is he hearing weak stations and many of them? We haven't heard anything about that. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I'm going to be asking him that because the G5RV is supposed to cover every one of the bands, although to cover those bands even better by way of a fan dipole, I like that, just by adding some extra wire to what he's got, could make quite a bit of improvement. So have you listened on other bands than 20 meters, Jim? What does 80 and 40 and 15 meters sound like? Had you listened to those? And by the way, just to be double darn sure, when you got the receiver set to one of those bands, also do the antenna connect and disconnect and make sure you're hearing band noise. Give me a couple words on that one, Jim. KE2BHY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
NY2HF would comment at the general.
You're going to be after Doug, but go ahead, Jim, first.
First, I'd like to say thanks to everyone who's contributed. It's really been very helpful, and there are a lot of people contributing, and I thank everyone for all their tips. And I've been on every band, and on every band it's basically the same story. I go on 40 sometimes at night, and it's the same story. You know, I'll get one or two stations that I can hear, and the rest is just noise. Also, I'm not necessarily only on 20 at 12 or 1. I mean, I'm on in the late evening and sometimes in the morning. And, it's the same story.
Okay. That gives us more information, Jim. Doug, the B2SAY, I bet you do quite a bit of 20-meter work these days. And what do you think the band is like? Is it as bad as Barry says? The B2SAY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Hi, this is WA2SAY. I wish I could answer that question, but I can't. I'm not on the air, really. Anyway, with the reason I broke in here, you mentioned about putting an antenna, you know, up on a, I guess the peak of the antenna, the inverted V up on a pole. There's a message yesterday, an email message to Ham for Sale. That's the name of the, I guess the name of the outfit. A fellow over in New Jersey is selling bundles of 4-foot fiberglass military poles, 5 poles for $20. These things slip into one another. I guess they're a little bit bigger at one end or something like that. Anyway, the guy's call is W2 Tango Tango Tango, and his name is J. Gordon Beattie Jr. I guess you can look him up in QRZ. I don't have an address here. He wants $20 for a bundle of five of these poles. That would get you up 20 feet. And he claims that you can put it up without, you know, for a little antenna like that, you can put it up without any guying. And I guess, obviously, if you have an inverted V, you could use that for a guy. Oh, well, here you can call him up. Here's a telephone number. 201-314-6964. So he's selling these poles for five poles for $20 plus shipping. I don't know what shipping would cost for these fiberglass poles, or someplace in New Jersey. Maybe you could go down and drive down and pick them up. I don't know. Anyway, you can also inquiry to him at w2tt@att.net. So mail to w2tt@att.net. If you don't want to call him on the phone, and he can tell you about it, it might be worthwhile doing that so that you get your antenna clear from the window and out from away from the house, and it might work a lot better that way. W-A-2-S-A-Y, back to net.
Hey, Doug, that's an excellent suggestion. With those poles, it's all kinds of antennas you can build with those beautiful fiberglass poles. And when it comes to Gordon, Whiskey 2, Tango, 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 he's a good guy. He runs the TechNet in New Jersey. And I think it's on Thursday night is when they own their TechNet. The Barra Group. I'm trying to remember what Barra stands for. So, Gordon, he's the guy who runs the TechNet in New Jersey. So, having those poles, Jim can afford it, there's all kinds of construction projects you can do with that. Doug, where did you find this advertised? I think you told us, and I missed it. Just to make sure, Doug, you found out about Gordon selling these poles by what means? W2SAY, wait for the beeps, K2RIW in the TechNet.
W-A-2-S-A-Y here. There's an email message that I got. It's addressed to, let's see, it's just addressed to me, but I guess I'm a member of this organization, whatever it is. The subject is in square brackets, Ham 4, with the number 4, Ham for Sale. And every once in a while I get a message to this outfit, Ham for Sale, somebody's selling something. So I guess I'm not quite sure how I got a hold of this in the first place, but every so often I get a message from somebody, you know, different guys, and for sale, and somebody's selling something, whether it's some beep like this or maybe it's a $1,000 Collins rig or something. But anyway, I guess you could check in with Google and look for Ham for Sale and find out how to get a hold of this, you know, how to get on their list. That's all I can suggest. Back to you, Dick. W-A-2-S-A-Y.
Very good suggestion, Doug. Doug, I'd be beholden to you if you would forward that email that you received to me. And to Jim, but you send it to me and I'll make sure Jim gets it. So please forward one of those to me. And I sent you an email tonight. I thought I had sent it at noontime and I was looking up a word, got diverted. And therefore, it didn't get sent until like 7:45. I answered your question with reference to that. We think it's an optical U.S. Communication Network that we might get into. We're not going to get into that one tonight, I can tell. It was a good question you asked, though, out of the latest issue of, I got it right here in front of me, microwaves and RF. This very difficult to understand article on a 10 gigabyte per second linear burst mode receiver with 85 dB of gain, 85 dB lambda of gain, whatever the hell that means. We'll have to find out from the optical people, but I don't think we're going to get into that one tonight. Lou, I know you wanted to say something. NY2H, one of our directors, K2RIW. Go ahead, Lou.
I'm sorry, Dick. This is not Lou. This is Dennis. This is NY2HF.
You're going to have to forgive me, Dennis. I'm only going to do that every other time. Go right ahead, Dennis. NY2 Hotel Foxtrot, K2RIW.
Thank you, Dick. As far as the sunspots, Jay sent this to me the other day, NY2NY, and it's from skyandtelescope.com, and it talks about the weakest solar cycle in 100 years, and it's talking about that the solar cycle is supposed to be 11 years. It was a year late this time. So for anybody who's interested, they should go and read this article. It's really interesting. It's at skyandtelescope.com, and the article is called The Weakest Solar Cycle in 100 Years.
Extremely good information, Lou. Yeah, Sky and Telescope magazine, I think they've been around for 100 years. And so among the telescope builders, telescope users, that's one of the Cadillac monthly magazines, Sky and Tel, which you can see on newsstands. So I think you're saying, is it the latest issue that's describing that this is the... you said go to the website. So if we go to the website of Sky and Telescope, then they will tell us that this is the weakest sunspot cycle. I know that when you get a really good sunspot cycle, many of the HF bands are blasting all day long and all night long. And so with a weak sunspot, when those sunspots are not cooperating and the ionosphere is not being lit up as the way it should be by that solar wind coming from those sunspots, then 20-meter propagation, for instance, is going to suffer. So it's quite possible, Jim, that some of what you're seeing as lack of activity is not because of your equipment. It could be the band itself. And it's too bad there isn't a way that when you're doing your 20-meter operation, let me drop. When you're doing your 20-meter operation, too bad there isn't a way that you could, at that time, check in with one of these old salty guys who really know what the band should sound like because they've been there for 20 and 30 and 40 years. If there was some kind of a way that at the instant you're only hearing one or two signals on the band, if you could double check with Barry into Moon Bounce or Doug W2SAY or Glenn KC2QIQ or any of these other guys who have really been there a whole lot, I wish there was some convenient way. I guess there is. Wait a minute. By the chat room. We've got this beautiful chat room that Lou just established for us. Is there a way that by way of the chat room, Jim could put out the question, I'm on 20 meters now. I'm only hearing two signals. Is it me or is that what the band is really doing? Is there a way that that could be done? Anybody want to give us a comment on that? Give me a call. Letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Yeah, not too many of us have used the chat room yet. My son set it up for me and it worked a few times, and now all of a sudden it's not working. I'm not much of a programmer, as you can tell, PC equipment. That's not my forte.
KC2QIQ with a lot more comments.
Okay, we got both John, I think it's John, and Glenn. I'm going to take Glenn first. Go ahead, Glenn.
K2GJE with a comment.
And GJE recognized, but Glenn first. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things I would definitely suggest is there's a program out there called Ham Radio Deluxe, and it's one of those programs that kind of allows you to operate your transceiver remotely, but usually that program comes bundled with a whole bunch of websites that allow you to track satellites It tells you where all the GX clusters are. It tells you where everything is on, like, every band. Every ham, if there's a ham radio band on it and it has a cluster and activity, it's listed there. Also, if you go into QRZ and you open up that website, take a look inside there, there's a DX forum that also shows the clusters. So just doing a little bit of, searching around the Internet and possibly picking up a copy of HRD. I said, I think that's just a really neat program. And I don't even think he's got to purchase it. I think you can get HRD today as freeware. It's sometimes you get it freeware or, close to like $10 or something like that on eBay. And it's just a good thing to have. And he can actually turn his computer on, take a look at what's on the web, and see which bands and how much activity there is. And this way, if something's coming on, that he should be hearing somebody coming on from Israel or some Poland or wherever, he can just all of a sudden see the call signs and dial right in. KC2QIQ.
Okay, we've got Edwin and John and the other person with comment. We'll pick you guys all up. Don't worry. John was next. KC2WGB, K2RW. Go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Yes, the chat room is available 724. It's on all the time. And you can key in there. You can see who's available on the list. And if they're there, they would probably answer it. That's a great idea. If he could prearrange it, he could set it up right there with his computer and while he's working on a radio with somebody who can drop in on the chat room and fill him in on what's going on in this location. That's a good idea. Back to you, Dick.
And to SLW with a comment?
SLW, we're going to get to you after Edwin. When it comes to what Glenn was saying, where one of those sites are telling you that, hey, so-and-so is on from Israel right now, you got to be a little bit careful with that information because those guys that are hearing Israel, the band may only be partially open, and for all we know, that guy is using a five-element Yagi on 2 meters mounted at 75 feet, and he's hearing Israel, and he's telling us about it. And the rest of us normal people with feet on the ground might not be able to hear that signal. You got to be a little bit careful with that one. Edwin, go ahead with your comment. K2GJE, K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2GJE. No mention has been made of what he did with the ladder line that feeds that G5RZ. Also, I like to listen to the 15 megacycle WWZ signal from Fort Collins. If I can't hear it, I think the band is dead. When I lived in Europe for a year, I was 6 hours ahead. So when it was 6 o'clock there at night, it was noon here in the States, and I didn't have any trouble working the States, well, the Eastern Seaboard at any rate, every night on a continual basis. Over.
I'll have a website for Jim in about 30 seconds into my problem.
Very fine then, Barry. And also, you just brought up something very interesting, Edwin. The battery went dead in my watch, and I went through a big procedure for replacing the battery, and then I wanted to reset the watch, and so I'm using this handheld 5, 10, and 15 megacycle WWV receiver, and I'm walking all around the house, walking around outdoors, trying to get reception on 15 megacycles. 10 was dead, 5 was dead, 2.5 was dead. On 15 megs, I was hearing a little bit of WWV in Boulder, Colorado. And, of course, every time they announced the times when there would be a dropout, if you know what I mean, it took me 15 minutes trying to hear WWV this afternoon to set my watch. So propagation-wise, I can tell that HF conditions are pretty yucky during this particular sunspot cycle. I had great difficulty finding enough signal from WWV, even though I'm hearing noise on the band, in order to reset my watch. I think the next person who wanted to make a comment, I think it was SOS, SLW, you know who you are. Give me your full call and name and go right ahead with your comment, K2LIW.
And Dick, one more comment from me as well, KC2QIQ.
Comment there, KO2, okay.
Okay, SOS, LSW, that one first, go ahead.
Okay, Dick, this Ron, N2SLW in Queens. Perhaps Jim could utilize the repeater when he gets on HF and just ask if anyone's on around the time he's getting on.
Another good suggestion. John, thank you. Glenn, go ahead with your further comments.
Yeah, just one other comment about using, you know, DX cluster software. You were warning, oh, you got to be careful because only the guys with the super antennas are going to be able to hear that. That's really not a very accurate comment, and the reason I'm going to say that is because if you have, say, a DX station that's on there, he may not be able to hear the station that's really deep DX, but what he's going to hear, or should be hearing, is all the other stations that are out there trying to contact this guy, because then he can start really judging how good his antenna is and his altitude and everything, because when you're hearing one side of the conversation, he may not hear the DX, but if, mark my word, if the DX is actually listed on the Internet, either through HRD or any one of the other programs that are out there, and he sees that DX cluster lit, mark my word, he tunes to that frequency, because it'll show the frequency, it'll show the station that everybody's trying to reach. He should be hearing all the other stations piling up on there, trying to reach this guy. KC2, QIQ.
Comment, KO2, okay.
Very fine, Glenn. KO2, okay. Go right ahead, south, your name, and give us your comment, sir.
Hi, Dick. It's Bat, KO2, okay, in New Jersey. Very nice, useful site with a map that shows all the recent cluster listings. It's called dxmaps.com, www.dxmaps.com, and you can look at it by band, and you can look at, I use it for VHF mostly, but it covers all the HF bands on a separate tab, and you can look at it either by continent or for the world, and it'll represent any recent, I think it's an hour or 2 hour block of contacts, showing both the person that made the listing, their location, as well as the DX location. So you get lines from one area to the other. It's very useful, and you can either look at it in the graphical representation of the maps, or you can click on the list tab, which will give you the cluster listing itself. So it's fun to look at, and very useful, and it's recent. Very recent DX cluster listing. So you can see by band how, which one's busy and where the contacts are. Back to you, KO2, okay.
More very good information, Bennett. Thank you. And for you guys who want to look up Bennett, KO2OK on QRZ.com, you're going to see a beautiful picture, top view of his face. Bennett, how the hell was that picture taken? Is that from a local tower, or did you have somebody fly with an airplane over your house? 3, 4, 5. I think I'm seeing a 5-element Yagi on 20 meters on top of that house. KO2OK, K2LIW.
Oh, Dick, Google Maps is getting much better, or Google Earth, whichever one it is. I think it's Google Earth. So that's all it is. And that's it's a 40-foot tower attached to the house with a couple of guys out to the roof into the backyard, and it has a 4-stack of antennas. It's got a KLM KT-34 4-element tri-bander, a 5-element 6-meter beam, a 9-element 2-meter beam, and a 19-element 432. So it's all together, but you really see the KT-34. That's the biggest antenna. Back to that. KO2, okay.
Is that all the antennas you got to bed? Well done. Okay, you got a ham radio heaven there. Well done. And your nearest neighbor is far enough away that you could build one hell of an antenna farm. Nice setup. Okay, I know you probably are feeling a little bit guilty that we're spending as much time as we are on you, Jim, but you've got a very universal problem. That is to say, we've been there. We feel for what you're going through. In the beginning, sometimes it's a little bit tough to find out all these details. And you know what Murphy's Law means, and Murphy's Law dictates that at the time you're operating 20 meters, Mother Nature decides that she's not going to have the 20-meter band in good shape. So a combination of a low antenna where you're squirting a lot of signal up in the air, not much out to the horizon, and the band not being that great, is all contributing to making the early results that you're getting right now not so great. Now, of all of those suggestions that people made with various websites, you might need a fill on some of those. And so we'll go right ahead and ask for those fills right now, Jim. KD2BHY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
NY2HF, a comment for Jim.
NY2H, go ahead.
If you go to 14208 right now, I'm getting 5x9 plus 20 on a reception, so you might want to try it out.
That sounds good, but I cannot right now. I'm in a different room than my HF radio. I have my 2-meter radio set up in a different room than my HF radio because I was I needed the base for this ground plane and I wanted to test it out, so I'm in a different room, but when I'm done here, I'll definitely go over and check.
So do you need any fills on any of the information we just gave you, Jim?
No, I wrote most of it down on an index card I got here in the shack, so I'll definitely log on to all those websites.
Okay, thank you guys. Lots of very good suggestions there. And I believe we've gone down the list of those who signed in for the early... Oh, yeah, Bill, AC2IS. Hope we haven't put you to sleep, Bill. Alpha Charlie 2, India Sierra, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, Dick, this is AC2IS. Am I hitting the repeater well?
You're 40% noise, 60% audio with my earphones. I'm hearing you. Not to worry. Go right ahead.
Okay, I've got a situation with the Wi-Fi stuff and some microwave ovens. I see advertised online this 50 dB cloth shielding. I'm wondering if that might be effective if I create a tent over these microwave ovens at blocking their interference.
Yeah, I've got a whole series of questions for you now. There's a series of microwave ovens that are giving you interference. Now, a microwave oven operates at exactly 2450 megahertz. They've got to be within a few megacycles of that exact frequency. Now, I guess some of the microwave ovens might have a switching power supply. And by the way, it was the calibrator that Jim was listening to on his receiver. Every 25 kc, he's got an S9 signal on his calibrator. And so the switching power supply could make a comb of signals a little bit like that. Give us a few words on how far away on these microwave ovens. Is your next door neighbor, or is there a cafeteria alongside of your house that's running five microwave ovens at worst at once? What's going on here, Bill? AC2IS, K2LIW in the Tech Man.
Yeah, this is AC2IS. The situation is at the work location where there are several microwave ovens that are used in a particular building for quote-unquote work purposes. And we have wireless access points. Sometimes the microwave ovens will be in between a wireless access point and clients trying to connect to that wireless access point.
Okay, now I'm getting the picture. My mind was all set up on HF radio. I thought you're trying to run a ham rig on, let's say, 20 meters, and microwave ovens are giving you grief already. So you got people doing real 802.11 communication with a Wi-Fi-like thing, and the microwave oven, when it goes on. I guess you've done some testing, Bill, and you've correlated. In other words, you know that you're looking at the person who's heating up his lunch on the microwave oven, and the person at that exact same period of time is trying to make contact on the 802.11 system, and it ain't working, and the microwave oven goes off, and then it does work. You've seen correlation like that, Bill. Go ahead.
AC2IS here. Yes, I've seen that correlation. I've seen connectivity drop out at the exact moment when the microwave oven goes on and come back at the exact moment the microwave oven goes off. Also, I have a spectrum analyzer which is very poor in terms of showing a waterfall diagram and panorama view, but it does have some built-in analysis that when the microwave goes on says, oops, getting interference now from a microwave oven.
Now, is there a way, I was about to ask you, can you quantify it? In other words, was there at least a known antenna connected to that spectrum analyzer, and you're seeing a signal on the screen of, let me pick a number, minus 70 dBm, and it's going to squitter around a whole lot. It's a free-running magnetron. Now, I know where you're trying to go here. If I had to shield a series of microwave ovens, I'm assuming it's a cafeteria, and there's four microwave ovens side by side, people walk up to them in the heat of their lunch. It's a bunch of speculation on my part, but the cafeteria where I've worked most recently, that's exactly the way it was set up. And if they are leaking signal, and by the way, the amount of signal that's called leakage, if it leaks, if you hold the right kind of a sensing device near the door, and you see less than 1 milliwatt per square centimeter, I believe it's considered in specification. However, 1 milliwatt per square centimeter, and maybe it's a tenth of a milliwatt per square centimeter, but numbers like that, which are very safe for human beings as far as radio frequency biohazard is concerned. So that doesn't mean the microwave oven is dangerous. Let me drop. However, that very benign sounding signal, 0.1 or 1.0 milliwatt per square centimeter, 3 inches or I think it's 10 centimeters away from the door or 3 centimeters away from the door, when you measure that signal level and confirm that the microwave oven is safe for humans, that is a whopping big signal as far as a sensitive radio is concerned. That's going to be jamming things for 50 feet, if not more. And now, if you want to shield that, holy mackerel. You know what a screen room looks like, Bill. It is a six-sided box with two layers of screening, and all the doors have got finger stock and whatever, to really knock down a signal by way of shielding. Takes heroic things. By way of a couple of more experiments, you could find out, is the microwave oven giving you interference that's 5 dB too strong or 50 dB too strong? If it's 50 dB too strong, forget it. No way in hell are you going to get there and still have human beings that have access to those microwave ovens unless you mount them in the screen room and make sure the guy is only using the microwave oven when the door of the screen room is closed. But if it's 5 dB above threshold and you got to knock it down by 5, I can think of ways of doing it, and my first way would be to rearrange life. Now, put the microwave ovens off to some other location. Of course, you're going to get flack from the people. But to shield that, you're going to be amazed how difficult it is. Let me drop.
KC2QAQ with a comment.
Okay, you do, okay.
LWH-111.
Okay, we've got Eric, Glenn, and Joe in that order. Or maybe the other order, but you know what I mean. To shield that, as I thought.
Repeater, time out.
As I've often said, once you radiate, once you transmit a radio signal, it's going to go to every single cubic centimeter of this universe. I mean, left to discuss is how strong is it when it gets there, and is it above the threshold of the equipment you're using? And to stop it from doing that is a bitch of a problem. Let's see, we're gonna find out if these three smart guys have got a way of getting around it. Glenn, KC2QIQ, K2LIW, how would you solve that one?
Yeah, very good, Dick. Actually, this problem has been around a long time. As a matter of fact, this is such a big problem for Cisco systems in California when they were trying to deploy systems all over the place with their routers and things, that people were complaining because of different levels and frequencies of different routers are more sensitive than others, and they were getting the black eye because of this problem. How Cisco got around this issue was there's no way in the world that they're going to tell people to start shielding up the microwaves. How they did it was they came out with a series of antennas for their wireless router systems, and a lot of the other companies all started doing the same thing. They sell pretty much for all the routers higher gain antennas and remote antennas. So this way, if you can't move the router itself, but a lot of times you can move the antenna and get the antenna, higher gain antenna, and move it around, and it cures the issue. KC2QIQ.
Yeah, let me double check this now if I understand it correctly. By way of superior antennas on the router, you made the signal going to the client 10, 15, 20 decibels stronger. Proper layout of the antenna, proper location of the antenna, and higher gain antenna,
He just blasted the signal above the bank, the amplitude of the microwave oven. He used the brute force technique. Is that approximately it, Glenn?